This fall, the scripture readings take us on a guided tour of Matthew's ornery parables. Ornery because they all have a bit of an edge. Matthew, out of pastoral concern, is trying to nudge his church into becoming more faithful. And one of those parables goes this way. Jesus said, "What do you think? A man had two sons. He went to the first and said, 'Son, go and work in the vineyard today.' He answered, 'I will not.' But later he changed his mind and went. The father went to the second and said the same. And he answered, 'I go, sir.' But he did not go. Which of the two did the will of the father?" They said, "The first." Jesus said to them, "Truly I tell you, the tax collectors and the prostitutes are going into the kingdom of heaven ahead of all of you. For John came to you in the way of righteousness, and you did not believe him. But the tax collectors and the prostitutes believed him. And even after you saw it, you did not change your minds and believe him." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I have great affection for this text. 30 years ago, this weekend, this was the Bible passage for the very first sermon I ever preached in this sanctuary. That too was the last weekend in September. The day was governed by my candidating sermon, and if you don't know what that is a peculiar Presbyterian tradition in the North, which is actually not recorded in our Book of Order. The minister preaches the sermon, the congregation votes on whether or not they want that preaching. My loved ones were a little anxious about the event, not only because it might involve a relocation. No, the anxiety increased when they discovered I was going to preach on this text. I thought it was irresistible. Just think, to stand in front of a group of people you have never met, give them a broad smile, and pronounce the words of Jesus, "The tax collectors and the prostitutes are going to heaven before the rest of you." 30 years ago, that was a pretty good text for puncturing the hollow righteousness of all the Pharisees. So, to keep it light, I referred to the movie Pretty Women. If you saw it, you can figure out why. And to keep it cheerful, I reminded us that John the Baptist ate bugs for breakfast before he preached repentance. Nevertheless, you voted to keep me around, and here we are. Today, what draws my attention is not the harsh word about the tax collectors and the prostitutes, but that little parable right before it. A father has two sons. That sounds kind of familiar. Neither one of them wants to do what the father wants them to do. And then one of them changes his mind. So what do you think about this story? What do you think? Some of us have children who would not clean their rooms. Some of us have other family members who do not clean their rooms. The parent declares, "Clean it up." One says no, and later does it. The other says okay, and gets sidetracked by the cell phone. We know these children, and we might think that Jesus should probably mention a third child, the one who immediately goes to the vineyard after the father sends him. But he doesn't say anything about that. That would be too easy, and it would prop up those who presume that they are always flawless and do what is right. Now, Jesus mentions only two kinds of people: those who resist the father's direction and later change their minds, and those who say, "Oh, yes, yes, I'll go," and they never get there. What do you think about that? Which of these children might be you? Maybe you'll say you're the first. When the order comes, your arms were folded, you stood unmoved. You hear some clear directions on what you should do, especially with your life, but then you'd prefer to do it on your own. Thank you very much. And the only honest thing is to tell the Father the truth. I'm not going where you want me to go. I'm not doing what you want me to do. And that kind of honesty is important. It has its own integrity because what you say is what you do. And over time, things change. You change, you soften. The wisdom of the Father's instruction begins to make some sense. Either that, or you're going hungry and you figure you might as well go out to the vineyard after all and earn some money by picking the grapes. Sooner or later, you find yourself doing what the Father directed you to do from the beginning. It took a while, but you end up in the place where you were supposed to be. It's important to see that Jesus is not particularly harsh about this extended time plan. It doesn't seem to bother him that some folks say no to the Father. That's because Jesus is a Calvinist. And like John Calvin, Jesus knows that all people resist what the Father tells them to do. Seems to be in our DNA. They may resist because they're cranky, they may resist because they're hard-headed, they may resist just to resist. Now, there is an official religious word to describe this condition. Let's just merely take it as a description of who we are. And the good news is that Jesus is patient. Even though the hard heads are slow to come to their senses, maybe life has buffeted them around, or they decide their road is the wrong road. And however happens, they do change direction. They discover the old Father isn't so clueless after all and has had their best interests in mind. This, officially, is called the doctrine of salvation, where we end up in a different place from where we once were headed. Despite the initial resistance, kid number one gets in God's door. But then there's that other child. This is the one who says all the right words but doesn't do them. He speaks with respect in the parable. In the Greek, he even calls the Father Kurios, which is Lord. He agrees with the Father until the Father is out of sight, and then he doesn't do what he says. Or he promises results. I'll go to the vineyard. If it gets there, it would only be on his terms and on his time schedule. God knows there are people in that second category. They sound so obedient, so correct, so connected to the holy will of God. But when the truth comes, there is nothing about them more than they are fakes and charlatans, con artists. So what do you think? Which of the two is doing the Father's will? Now take note, this story comes to us in chapter 21. In the beginning of the chapter, Jesus rides the humble donkey down into the city that will reject him. He immediately turns over the tables of the money changers and calls out the hypocrites in the temple. And then the controversy intensifies as there is pushback from the professional religious leaders in Jerusalem. That's where he is in this parable. He is standing in the temple, the habitually religious buzz around him like hornets. And you can guess what he's going to say. Because one of the recurring criticisms of religious people is that they say one thing and do another, that it's a lot of talk and never any action. Now, certainly this can happen. You may be acquainted with people, maybe acquainted all too well, with those who say, Lord, Lord, and then sit on their hands. And sometimes we need to fess up, we're not always the people we profess to be. and none of us ever totally live up to the life set before us in our baptism. I think Matthew is shining light on this. He knows that there are disconnections between the Christian faith that people espouse and the deeds that they do or never get around to doing. Some years ago, I was in Montana, and I picked up a book in a bookstore. It offered stories about some of those unsavory characters who had settled there, and the title of the book is what actually sold it to me. It was called Speaking Ill of the Dead, Jerks in Montana History. One of the more unsavory stories, and there were quite a few, had to do with the mistreatment of Native Americans who were pushed off their land onto reservations. As new settlers in Montana enlarged their ranches, they enlisted the U.S. Army to shove back the Indians to the most useless scrubland. And you probably already know pieces of this from history class. What you may not know are the accounts of how the supplies that our government sent to the displaced natives rarely reached the people of the northern tribes. The supplies were often bushwhacked or sold by brokers or auctioned off to white settlers for profit. A lot of Native Americans starved to death in the 1880s because they never received the food that the government provided for them. And the most stunning detail is that the people responsible for this travesty were three successive directors of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, all of whom were United Methodist preachers. What do you think? Jesus said, "Not everybody who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father in heaven." He calls on all of us to integrate word and deed, to hold together what we believe and what we do. And he does this because there are some who say to the Father, "I'm going to your vineyard, sir," and they never seem to get there. This is not a new issue, and not even specifically a Christian issue, nor is it a lighthearted one. In fact, it is so important, it even makes the list of what we call the Ten Commandments. God decrees, "You shall not take the Lord's name in vain." Now, that commandment is not referring to swearing if somebody bumps your bumper out in the church parking lot. No, the commandment is about taking the name of the Lord, saying we belong to God, saying we are Christians, and then acting as if it doesn't matter. That would be taking God's name and doing it in vain. So to hear Matthew tell this parable, he wants to know that God will find some Christians in the church. He wants to know that there are believers with old-fashioned integrity. He wants to see people who believe that Jesus is the life of the world and live as if that is true. Talk is cheap, and God knows there is a vineyard ripe with the harvest. So, a mere 30 years in, let me say what a delight it is, what a soul-building delight to serve among people who take the gospel seriously. This is a church that aims to live the faith with consistency and coherence. Sure, we have our lapses and bumps, but around here, we just think of that as testimony about the patience of the Lord. In the thick of this pandemic, we are serving the community, which is exactly how it should be. We are sharing the love of Christ. Thank you. Thank you. This is an extraordinary household of faith, and I'm grateful. So, let's keep going. We have a far distance to go and a lot more people to love. God bless you.